All right, my overview will be on cosmology with galaxy clusters, and it's just that, just an overview. Most of the results I'm going to show is 2 or 3 years old, and compared to Mark's presentation, where every slide was something in preparation, submitted, etc., it will look a little bit old, and there are good reasons for that. Because to do cluster cosmology work, you need to do a lot of astrophysical work first. Okay, so the reason why, the primary reason why we do a cosmology with clusters is because we can trace with them, we can trace the development of cosmic structures from very early time when the three poles were just seeded into the universe during inflation, and we observe those ripples in the cosmic microwave background. We can observe the development of those structures all the way to the present through redshifts around 1.5. That's where the universe entered into the accelerated expansion phase. And so these systems, clusters of galaxies, are very good for studying dark energy. It just happened that a minute ago I put another slide into my talk, and that would be nice follow-up on Gus's question. There's a painting from a Russian artist in 1870s called A Warrior at the Crossroads. And the inscription on the stone says, if you go that way, you will lose your horse. If you go this way, you will lose your head. If you go this way, you will lose your sword. So the warrior stays and doesn't know what to do, and he looks at the results of past battles. Okay? I think the message from this painting is the safest place is actually not to go far into astrophysics or too far in cosmology. Stay at the crossroads. Okay, let's do a little review why what is the basis of doing cosmology with galaxy clusters. So clusters, this is a picture from Millennium Simulations. Clusters are big big bright dots in this large-scale distribution of dark matter. So clusters form at the location of very high amplitude peaks in the density field. And because of that, they are highly biased tracers of large-scale structure. So looking at the distribution of dots in the space, they approximately follow the distribution of all matter with an amplification factor. And the number density of this high-density peaks is exponentially sensitive to the overall scale of perturbation. It's in a way you can characterize the scale of those perturbations by the probability to cross a threshold, and that threshold is about 3 sigma high. So there is a lot of sensitivity. You can determine very precisely the overall amplitude of perturbations if you measure the number of clusters. Another important point is that we can observe those regions in multiple ways with different techniques which are sensitive to different components within the cluster, and they have different sensitivity to the overall geometry of the universe. For example, if we observe in the this object in the X-rays, what we see with the telescope is an integral over gas density squared divided by distance squared. If you observe the same parcel of the gas in the microwave with the Sinyavsky-Davidoff effect, the total signal is something like the total energy of electrons in that volume over distance squared. In the optical, we see the number of galaxies, which should be roughly proportional to the mass. With lensing, we see the total mass divided by distance. By combining all these measurements, because we observe the same gas, the same object, by combining those measurements, we can either learn much better about cluster mass, or we can combine those measurements to construct geometrical tests. So let me do a quick overview of state-of-the-art measurements for some of those tests. First of all, it's from combination of the microwave and X-ray measurement for a cluster, you can determine absolute distances. Again, in the X-rays from the same gas, we observe integral of density squared over distance squared. In SZ, it's pressure over distance squared, and the temperature of the gas we can derive from the X-ray spectrum. So there are several observables, and by combining the two, by requiring that we look at the same volume of gas, we can measure the distance. So the distance, you can plot the distance to the cluster as a function of redshift, and this is from work of Max Bonmenti et al. In 2006. You can derive the Hubble constant independent of the cosmic ladder. And so they get interesting results. They have nice small statistical error bars, systematic error bars, which are not very different from what you can achieve with other methods. So this is a nice independent measurement of the Hubble constant. If you measure the gas in the cluster, the amount of gas in the cluster is in X-rays, and if you measure the total mass dynamically or through weak lensing, you have different sensitivity to the distance. So if you determine the fraction of hot gas in the systems, in the system, the value you derive will be distance dependent. And you expect from basic theory that this value should be roughly constant as a function of cluster mass and as a function of redshift. So this gives you a nice distance indicator. So there was a lot of work into this area starting late 90s, but meaningful measurement was done by Steve Allen's group with Chandra. They observed a for the first time, and they observed a large number of clusters over wide range of redshifts, and they indeed find that F gas is constant as a function of Z only if you assume the right cosmology. If you assume, for example, a cosmology without dark energy and with matter density equal to the critical value, you will find a strong trend in this diagram. So this is a nice independent geometrical confirmation of the accelerated expansion of the universe, and you can use those measurements to improve constraints on the equation of state parameter for dark energy. So for example, you get a 30% measurement on the equation of state from this kind of data. Now let's talk about large-scale structures. One measurement which is very nice but has not so far received a lot of attention is the ability of using clusters to track the power spectrum of density distribution. So the best published results I could find come from X-ray samples called Reflex. These are the samples of several hundred of clusters derived from Rosatel Sky Survey. The depth of that sample goes to redshift something like 0.3. So you can use those clusters to track to derive the power spectrum of matter. So the blue data points are the latest results from a second generation of Reflex. Paper by Balaguer and Talines et al., 2007. And you can see that clusters are much strongly biased than the galaxies in the same volume. So the galaxies and the clusters should trace the same distribution of matter, but the difference is almost a factor of 5 because clusters are much more massive objects. With clusters, you have a much better control on the mass of the system than you do with the galaxies. Okay, so you can play interesting games if you have a really nice high quality measurement of the cluster power spectrum. For example, now there is a lot of discussion of when we have big samples and we can measure this power spectrum over a broad range of scales, you can use this to determine scale-dependent biases in the distribution of clusters and use those to constrain things like non-Gaussianities in the initial density perturbations. But you can also use this data to independently measure more classical things like what is the amplitude of density perturbation in the universe on the 8 megaparsec scale, so sigma 8. Or what is the overall slope of the power density spectrum at around 0.5, 0.1 inverse megaparsecs. That gives you a good constraint on combination of cosmological parameters such as omega m times h. So you can use those to do more classical cosmology. You can also use power spectra to control how well you can determine the mass of the system. So for example, in the same paper, they plotted the power spectrum as a function of the X-ray luminosity cut. So the higher you make a cut in luminosity, presumably you select more massive objects, and you see that the power spectrum gets stronger and stronger. So in principle, the theory makes a prediction for a relation between the number density of clusters for a given mass and the amplitude of their correlation function of the power spectrum. And you can check, you can use this power spectrum to cross-check internally in your survey that your masses are measured to a given precision. Okay. Unfortunately, this is still based on samples of hundreds of objects. So the good constraints will come when we have surveys with tens of thousands of clusters, and these are forthcoming in the future. Now, a more widely realized test based on cluster on connection between large scale structure and clusters is the mass function. So, as I said, the mass function amplitude is exponentially sensitive to the amplitude of density perturbations. So, here is an observed function of mass function of clusters, the number density as a function of mass for a low redshift sample observed with Chandra. So simply by fitting an analytic model, a theoretical model for the mass function, you can determine the amplitude to 1.5% in terms of sigma 8 if you have a sample of 50 clusters. This is a great statistical sensitivity, and it comes because of this fact that the clusters are highly very high peaks in the density field. So. This panel shows the an example of combined constraints on sigma 8 and omega meter that you can derive by fitting this data set with 50 clusters. So by comparison with what you can do with the cosmic microwave background or the weak lensing shear measurement in an 80 square degrees field, you see that a fairly small sample of galaxy clusters gives you very highly competitive constraints on sigma 8. So for all other parameters fixed, you can, with this small number of objects, you can determine the amplitude of density perturbation in the universe to 1.5% precision. This is not the kind of accuracy that is normally achievable in astronomy or cosmology. Even if you allow for some degree of uncertainty in your knowledge of total masses of those clusters. So, for example, if you say that I don't know the cluster masses to better than 10%, this translates to only 3% uncertainty in the derived value of sigma 8. So, the ability to do this type of measurements rests upon the availability of reliable indicators of the cluster total mass. So if you're clever and if you combine right quantities, right observable parameters for a cluster, you can construct observables that are correlated with mass very, very well. So this plot is from simulations by Andrei Kravtsov and Isaac Nagai. So we studied different ways of characterizing clusters, and this is this proxy YX, basically the total thermal energy of gas you measure in X-rays plotted against the cluster mass. It shows a very nice correlation. and a little difference between relaxed and non-relaxed clusters, so it's stable to dynamics. The existence of such correlation, that's an important point. The existence of such correlation is predicted by a very simple argument, like self-similarity of clusters, or and virial theorem, and fair sample hypothesis. So for example, if the clusters should have the standard mixture of gas, the gas and dark matter particles should be virialized in that volume, and all clusters are scaled versions of one another. From these very simple arguments, very robust theory, you can make a prediction for existence of a relation between mass and yx of this form. And you now run more elaborate computation on the computer, which include all the hydrodynamics and even star formation, and you indeed arrive to a relation of this form. So this is very nice. It shows that the underlying basis for such relation is very solid because it's based on a very simple theory, and you can test it by running full-scale numerical simulations. You can now go and find how these relations are they hold when you for the observed clusters? The answer so far is yes. So, for example, this is a plot between for a relation between the total mass and yx for clusters for which we did hydrostatic measurements with Chandra, and a comparison of weak Lansing masses derived by Henk Hoekstra for a similar set of objects. So there is a nice correlation. The slope of that relation is almost exactly what's predicted by that very stable theory. And two methods of deriving cluster masses from observations agree to 9%. Monique Arnaud computed scaled pressure profiles of hot gas in a sample of clusters. So when you scale appropriately the pressure profiles and the radii, you find that at large radii, they all line up very, very nicely. Okay, so this is the same statement. The clusters are regular. If you look at stable quantities such as pressures, you find a lot of similarity between the objects. So you can use those measurements to derive masses. If you're not able to derive stable masses for your objects, you lose a lot of sensitivity. So this plot shows constraints on sigma 8 and omega method from Eduardo Rosa's work based on the SDSS max BCG sample of clusters. It's tens of thousands of objects. I should say that I was always very skeptical about the ability of deriving cosmological parameters from optical work, and I regard Eduardo's work as heroic. That you know, you with fairly poor mass proxies, you still get nice constraints on these cosmological parameters. But if you just compare the numbers with the X-ray sample, you achieve 2% accuracy in sigma 8 with 50 clusters. With SDSS sample of 10,000 clusters, the statistical error bars are 3%. You have to trade all of this statistical sensitivity to your insufficient knowledge of relation between cluster mass.
For a dollar, you might have won.
Right. So, so the point is, you can achieve more if you struggle with the systematic uncertainties in your measurement than if you simply try to increase your service further and further and to tens and hundreds of thousands of objects. Another example is it's early days, but SPT, early sample, early result from SPT from van der Wijn et al. With SPT, so the clusters are detected in the Sinyaev-Zeldovich effect, and you can see the uncertainties on sigma 8 are pretty substantial. The number of clusters is smaller than in the X-ray sample, but the crucial point is with these early SPT results, the only mass indicator they had was a just a statistical significance of detecting the cluster on top of the cosmic microwave background fluctuation. And it's a noisy measurement, and again, a priori, without putting further constraints on the relation between this SZ significance and mass, we cannot make precise measurements of the mass function, and hence you get the degradation in sigma 8. So it definitely pays if you pay attention to the calibration of the mass proxies and you use the good ones. So coming back to the mass function, so you can do this measurement at the redshift zero, and you can progressively, by observing clusters at higher and higher redshifts, you can measure the amplitude of perturbations at redshifts other than zero, and you can start building this cosmic growth of structure diagram. So this is these are the results from our Chandra sample. So you, the statistics we had was sufficient to split the cluster sample into low redshift bin and three high redshift bins. And so this is how the growth factor of structures evolved with redshift. It's normalized to the amplitude of perturbations measured by WMAP at redshift 1000. And you can see that the growth follows the cosmological model with the presence of cosmological constant, but it would be inconsistent with models without the cosmological constant. So this is a pure confirmation of existence of dark energy on the basis of structure growth. Of course, our dream is to be able to build this diagram over a more broad range of redshifts and with much better accuracy. So if we have samples of galaxy clusters reaching redshift of 2, then there is a viable strategy which you can implement based on the combination of weak lensing and X-ray measurements for those clusters to measure masses of clusters precisely enough in each redshift bin, and therefore to trace the growth of structure diagram to redshifts of 1 and beyond. So the applications of these measurements would be a test for non-GR theories to look for deviations from a concordance cosmology model, and a good numerical parameterization is through this growth index. And I'll come back to that growth index in a couple of slides. And from this type of measurement, you can constrain growth index to 2%, and it would be better than what's achievable with things like Euclid, et cetera. By combining the growth of structure measurements with other cosmological probes, you can achieve better constraints on the equation of state for dark energy, and again, you'll see that in a second. So this is why the measurements of cosmological parameters through growth of structure are useful. The plot from our 2009 paper shows individual constraints on equation of state of dark energy and density of dark energy achievable with different methods. So this is a general degeneracy for the supernovae, for WMAP, for clusters. And when you, once you combine all the methods, you get this nice small red circle in the center with only 4.5% statistical uncertainty on the W and 4% systematic uncertainty. So you, by looking at intersection of these different degeneracies, you not only improve the statistical uncertainties, obviously, but you also greatly increase the stability of your measurement to systematic uncertainties. So for example, without clusters, if you look at different sources of systematics in this combination, the uncertainty on the W would be almost 8% without introducing cluster data. With clusters, it goes down to 4%. Because you combine independent methods and they are, I can say, ideologically different methods with everything but clusters in this plot, you look at the geometrical manifestations of dark energy. With clusters, you for the first time bring this information on growth of structure, and so when you combine, you get better statistical and better systematic uncertainties. The next plot will emphasize why it's important to look at things like astrophysics or physics of supernova. So if you combine the same Chandra Cosmology Project clusters with the latest data set from other techniques, with WMAP7, with baryonic acoustic oscillations from Sloan Data Release 7 and 2DF, latest updated value of the Hubble constant from Ries et al., and updated supernova measurements from the constitution set. What you measure is this really small circle, and the uncertainties are this. W is minus 0.95 plus minus 0.029. So we are almost at 2 sigma from minus 1. So taken at the face value, this statistical accuracy would indicate that we are starting to detect deviations of dark energy from cosmological constant. That would be really exciting, but if you look at the budget of systematic uncertainties, it's plus minus 0.5%. So we are going into the situation where the systematic uncertainties start to dominate. So to make interesting statements about this quantity, these are, yes, these are one sigma regions. The interesting parameter is, these are not only one sigma, but also for delta chi square of one. So you look, the interesting parameter in this case is W zero. So you just project those contours on this axis and you get one sigma error bars. Okay, but the point is, we are now going into the regime where systematic uncertainties are dominant, and so we need to improve over those systematic uncertainties to go further. Another illustration of the same point is the current constraints on the growth index. So the growth index is defined by the log, you model log derivative of the growth factor as a mega meter, as a function of scale parameter times gamma. So gamma, this is the growth index. It is expected for that for dark energy models, even with the equation of state not equal to minus one, gamma would be 0.55. So for published results, by the way, you should look the paper by Dave Rapet et al. In 2010. This is what we get with our Chandra sample. So we can measure by fitting the growth index, a combination of growth index and W null. Gamma is 0.55 plus minus 0.08. If you include the normalization of the perturbations at the CMB epoch and plus minus 0.1 without that. So we constrain gamma to something like 10%, and the center value is 0.55, exactly what you expect for general relativity and physical dark energy model. However, again, if you ignore systematic uncertainties, the central value for W null is offset from minus one, and so this intersection, which corresponds to the concordance cosmology, is something like 1.5 sigma away from the best fit. So that would be really exciting. If we can shrink the error bars on this plot and the center value stays here, this would indicate that we are detecting the dark energy is not a cosmological constant, but the growth follows as you expect in general relativity. So that would be really exciting. But the measurement is dominated by the systematic uncertainties at the present, and so it's fully consistent with concurrence cosmology. And so for the final part of the talk, let's talk about several problems that I think we need to solve to be able to move this cosmology with cluster business further. One of them is the baryon fraction in clusters. So Mark described that. If you look at the stellar fraction as a function of mass, there seems to be a trend. If you look at the gas fraction as a function of mass, there seems to be a trend. If you add the two together, you eliminate the trend, but the value does not quite match the expectations of what we should get on the basis of the cosmic mean value. So each of these slides shows some kind of a problem. In this case, the amount of stellar mass in clusters is not a constant fraction of the cluster total mass. So we should take relations such as cluster richness versus mass, we should account for existence of such trend. We cannot simply and blindly assume that the amount of stars we see in the cluster should be exactly proportional to the cluster total mass. This trend shows that as you move to higher masses, clusters are more gas rich. So they are more X-ray luminous, they are more SZ luminous, and so this trend is the source of all kinds of breaks in the self-similar relations between mass and X-ray or synergial Deutsch observables. If this is true, then the fair sample hypothesis for clusters is not correct, right? We expect that for massive clusters, the mixture of all baryons and all of all dark matter is the same as in the universe. These measurements indicate that it's slightly offset. So once we move to a situation where we analyze cluster surveys with tens or 100,000 of objects, the level of systematic uncertainties we need to meet is incredibly low. We're talking about 1-2% requirements for characterization of cluster masses. The existence of such trends and problems of unaccounted for baryons or strong trends in gas or stellar mass, we need to be able to explain those trends if we want to move forward. Another problem, another area which needs more work is empirical calibration of cluster mass relation between total mass and observables. And one of the promising areas is using weak Lansing masses for a large sample of objects. So this plot I already showed that indicated a nice agreement between weak Lansing mass measurements and what you derive from X-rays. This is the latest work from Akabi et al. So it's a very similar plot, but they find a 9% or 10% offset between the cluster masses you derive from weak Lansing and the prediction from the hydrostatic X-ray analysis. This is still within the systematic uncertainties we allowed in analyzing the Chandra samples, but the results are not affected. But any such offsets need to be controlled to a much higher precision in the future. And moreover, theoretical work is needed to eliminate potential percent level biases in the weak Lansing mass estimates. Very latest work from Holger Israel thesis. This is a project he was doing with Thomas Reiprich. They took several high redshift clusters from the Chandra sample and went out to measure their weak Lansing masses. So this is a correlation between the X-ray prediction and weak Lansing mass At present, there is no indication that there is offset, but you can see that the error bars still need to be proved before we are able to make statements that the relations between X-ray and that our X-ray mass estimates are good to good enough precision at high redshifts. Finally, the outskirts. So this is just coming out, and this is really exciting. So Aurora Simeonescu and co-authors, they looked at the Perseus clusters with Suzaku. Suzaku is an instrument that has very low intrinsic background, but poor angular resolution. But in principle, you can trace the cluster signal to large radii. So Mark already described this. What you find is, as you go to something outside, something like 0.5 of R200, well, that should be comparable to R500. The derived F gas starts to shoot up above the mean value you expect for the above the value you expect in these clusters based on the fair sample hypothesis. But really. I'd say amazing thing is the level of clumpiness they derived to describe to describe this trend. At an R of R200, the level of clumpiness in terms of n measured to n true is between 2 and 3. The X-ray luminosity scales as gas density squared. So this would indicate that you, because of clumpiness, you overestimate the X-ray flux at this radii by factors between 5 and 9. So all you observe in this case are clumps. You don't see, almost you don't see the smooth intercluster gas at this radius. Okay? Very latest result from Chandra on the same topic. So we did a mosaic of observation of one of the clusters, ABL133. With Chandra, you can remove point sources very easily. So you can, all you see in this picture is just diffuse emission. And there are 6 identifiable clumps just outside of R500. And the image doesn't do justice in terms of describing the statistical significance of those clumps. If you really look at the photon image, you'll see that all of these are real. So these clumps, we can measure the temperature for the clumps. It's 1.6 keV. And we can determine that in this radial range, they contribute more than 60% of the flux. So now the question is, with Chandra directly and with Suzaku indirectly, we seem to observe a transition between the smooth state of the intercluster gas in the inner region to clumpy and highly disturbed state outside. So the question is, where exactly is the sweet spot in radios for doing cluster cosmology? So we tend to measure things within R500 for historical reasons. But if the gas transits into clumpy states just around this radius, we might want to, you know, to limit our measurements to a smaller fraction of that in the future when we need to achieve, you know, percent level precision. Another indication is with low resolution instruments, you know, SZ telescopes or ERA Zeta in the future, we are not going to be able to see those clumps, but these clumps will contribute to, you know, our characterization of the cluster. So to study this transition region would be really important to lay foundation for the precision cosmology. And so here is my slide. It's about the future, and it explains why we need this. So we are in the situation where cluster surveys are still picking up their pace. The SZ experiments on the ground are working. Planck is returning the first results. The X-ray survey, Spectrum X Gamma, and with ERA Zeta telescope is nearing its launch date and is expected to detect between 200 and 200,000 clusters to maximal redshift of 1.5. So this is a thriving field. If you look at the funding situation for things like WFIRST, it looks bleak. So the big question is, will clusters of galaxies in fact be the dark energy method of the 2020s? If they are, we better make our homework now to really make sure that we will be able to characterize these huge statistical samples to percent level precision so we can achieve nice uncertainties on cosmological parameters. Thank you.
I actually have two questions. The first one, you kept reiterating that we're getting to this regime where we're very much systematics limited. How do you see reducing those systematic uncertainties?
So one of the strategies, we developed it for an experimental setup where you have a big X-ray observatory such as IXO, and you can select samples of clusters from X-ray or other surveys. One of the strategies could be you can use the fact that in X-rays you can achieve low scatter between mass proxy and total mass. So with things like YX, you can characterize the cluster mass precisely but not accurately because there could be an offset. And then you can beam these clusters by YX and you can measure the total weak lensing signal. This way you can beat down the systematic uncertainties and mass. So the plot for the growth I showed between for redshift between 0 and 2 was for the situation where you select just 100 most massive clusters in per redshift beam from a big survey. You observe with high quality in X-rays and you observe the same clusters in weak lensing, and even if you have 25% uncertainties on weak lensing mass for an individual object, you can still get to percent level precision on average, and you can reconstruct the growth diagram with this accuracy. So I think the experimentally, the answer is in combination of high quality X-rays and weak lensing masses.
Thanks. I have one more quick one. You showed this very intriguing image from Chandra, showing that all this flux is coming out at R greater than R500. But Mark just got done convincing us that clusters are pretty self-similar at R greater than R500, and I'm having trouble reconciling these two things. I might have remembered wrong, so I don't know.
Well, I think it's if you believe the measurements, this measurement and this measurement, it's hard to argue, you know, against the data. Okay, I think we are basically we are previously most of our measurements were limited to R500. So going outside of R500 relied on noisy data or extrapolations from within that radius, and we are only starting to directly observe those regions outside. So.
So as I pass this down there, I'll ask a question myself, which is. When you actually put a systematic error on things like W-naught, how well do you actually believe your systematic error? I mean, at what level is the have the simulations informed this?
So, I think the question boils down to issues like, did we identify all the sources of systematic error, or is our, you know, assignment of systematic error for the particular source is reliable. So in this case, we did we tried, you know, different sources we could possibly conceive, and there was one clear winner. That was the cluster total mass calibration. Okay, it was dominant to any other sources of systematic uncertainties. So I think it's clear that the systematic is determined by how well you measure cluster masses. And now the question is, do we believe that the cluster masses are known to 10% as we assume? I think the comparison between different lensing measurements and the X-ray measurements, which agree to within 10%, indicates that that's really the case. So.
You mentioned SZ at low resolution missing the clumps in the outskirts of a cluster.
But I was just wondering, you know, thermal versus turbulent pressure support, would you actually expect a signature from the clumps in the outskirts at all, or would they be in pressure equilibrium, you know, just beyond R500?
Well, it strongly depends on what exactly is the configuration of that gas at R500. So if this is what the Chandra image indicates, so you have just small number of well-localized clumps which contribute most of the X-ray flux, then these clumps presumably are in equilibrium with their respective dark matter halos, or they might be confined by external pressure of the intercluster medium, and they can contribute, you know, a lot or they can subtract a lot from, depending on the exact configuration, from the overall SZ signal. If it's just the turbulence, just random motion, I think it's a clear prescription. You pretty much expect that the turbulence plus thermal pressure would still put the gas in equilibrium with the potential. So if you introduce thermal motions, you don't see an SZ, you subtract the corresponding fraction of the signal. But,
but if it's dominated by thermal pressure support, you're not going to see anything but smooth SZ there, right?
So. Yes. I think you're not going to be able to see those clumps individually in SZ. But if you do the radial profiles, things like radial profiles or total SZ flux in wide aperture, you will see the contribution from these clumps on average. So you better know what exactly the quantumness is doing.
A lower SZ signature, since turbulence would be dominating your pressure out there, right?
In simulations that Nick will be showing on Friday, we actually did look at pressure clumping as opposed to just the bulk sort of internal motions. So they are there. It's non-trivial. Pressure is more forgiving than density for sure, but it's still something which exists.
Actually, since we are talking about next generation things, you kept emphasizing the synergy between weak lens and X-rays. Do you think that next generation SZ could help, like CCAT? I mean, at that point, we are going to have better resolution. You can say within R500 with a large signal to noise.
So, the answer is yes. In my reservation is that with SZ, it seems like you need another generation of observatories. With X-rays, you can pretty much do this test with the type of telescopes we have at present. So, for example, the IXO was important, for what I was describing, only because of the huge effective area, not because of new, you know, revolutions in detector technology or mirrors, etc. With SZ, with the current generation of SZ, like Planck, like SPT, I don't think it's feasible because by themselves they are not able to measure Y from any given cluster with a small scatter. You can do it easily in X-rays. It's a noisy measurement.
You are saying that IXO is less next generation than CCAT is?
Well, technologically, yes.
Well, CCAT's a long time coming, but there are other things.
Dark energy. The LSST is supposed to also be coming online in this decade, and they have, as part of their science case, constraining W to, if I remember correctly, something like a percent. How do you see, Alex, the competitiveness of clusters, X-ray clusters versus LSST in constraining W? It'll be a bit of a race. The methods are different, but what's your view there?
So I think with LSST, with clusters, with X-ray clusters in particular, we demonstrated that you can measure the growth of structure, the function of that, with a nice precision, and you can use those measurements to constrain the equation of state. So this is to do the same thing with a greater precision with clusters requires just, you know, moderate improvement capabilities. I think it's still to be demonstrated that you can do the same thing with weak lensing, with just shear weak lensing. We never tried, so we don't know all the you know, potential problems. With geometrical methods like BAO and supernova, yes, you can do a nice precision, but I think it will be important still to be able to measure dark energy with a growth of structure method. So the answer is, from my perspective, is that clusters are demonstrably capable of measuring dark energy effects based on growth of structure, and I think in this slide. Predictions are that the things like growth index you can measure with cluster surveys to a precision which is comparable to weak lensing experiments, prediction for weak lensing for things like Euclid. So I think the area for cluster surveys is to concentrate on the growth of structure component of the dark energy studies.
So we have clearly slipped into our generalized discussion from the specific discussion. Is there anything that anybody wants to bring out in the generalized case, or do we want to do it over coffee?
So I want to make a general comment about the Baryon fraction, because this came up with both talks and also in this discussion. I think it is true that at any given mass, the discrepancy between what you expect and what is measured is 2 to 3 sigma. But remember that you have many masses. So the actual discrepancy is, I don't know how many sigma it is, but it is many sigma. So it's not correct, I think, to say that there's only 2 to 3 sigma discrepancy between what we observe and what we expect. It's a huge discrepancy. It's a hugely significant discrepancy.
So I'll comment on that comment. From a statistical point of view, yes, you have many more sigma. But one of the systematic uncertainties in the whole accounting is the systematic uncertainty in measuring mass. Okay. Well, maybe. You know. Right. I just want to point out, we can point out how the statistical errors will get a better and better measurement of the mean, but then the systematics are the key, are not as reducible that way.
Systematics are the key.
My comment on that is, well, up to now we know that there is this discrepancy, but for an X-ray select sample, okay, all the class of study are X-ray select. Now, I would like to emphasize the importance of accounting for the selection effects. Cluster, even a given mass, have a spread in properties. So if in your sample you are studying preferentially clusters which are brighter than the average, you select the cluster for the intercluster medium, and you determine the mass from the intercluster medium again, which is the dominant part. Well, it is possible that you are, in some sense, introducing a bias. The bias goes in the wrong direction. It does not help to reconcile the value. But nevertheless, I would like to see the same plot when you compute the baryon fraction as a function of mass for an optical selected cluster. Because in that case, you are measuring a property from the external intercluster medium, but in a way, in a sample which is selected independently on the quantity you are measuring. So it's not a circular argument. It's a really independent measurement.
Okay, I think it's coffee time now. We reconvene at 11.